Hey guys, this is Andrew with the Utah Jazz Podcast, and as I told you, I would be doing something for the draft. Now, the draft is over, obviously, because today is, what, the 30th? I believe today is the 30th. So, basically, any information that would have been had for the draft, basically, I got from David Locke. Locked On Sports, I got a couple other things from some of the Deseret News, just the SB Nation, and their whole basketball or Utah Jazz section. I mean, they did an awesome job. Jody Gesney and Bill Oram and David J. Smith and Andy Larson and all of them. I mean, they did a pretty good job covering the draft, and that's pretty much where I got most of my information from, is from those guys there and Locked On Sports, because he did a lot of player evaluations. Not a lot, probably. I think I did five different player evaluations from the draft, and he talked about a lot of players each and every day on his tip-off, so a lot of my knowledge and who I wanted was in there. So anyways, just a quick recap, the Jazz traded number 14 and number 21 to the Minnesota Timberwolves to get the rights to Trey Burke, who was selected number 9. Now, everything going up to that point, all the mock drafts had Nerlens Noel no later than 4. He slipped to number 6 to the New Orleans Pelicans, which is kind of surprising. Anthony Bennett was a surprise number 1 pick. Everybody thought it was probably going to be Cody Zeller. Was it Cody Zeller? I don't know. I'll have to pull up that draft page real quick. Or Victor Oladipo. So it would have been... Oh, it was Ben McLemore, Nerlens Noel, or Victor Oladipo, who were really kind of in that number one slot. Nerlens and McLemore slipped to 6 and 7. Zeller was number 4, which actually is a great pickup for the Bobcats. Cody Zeller, the Jazz had their eyes on Cody Zeller, and then he got drafted number 4. A lot of people had him probably around number 8 or 9, in which a lot of people thought the Jazz were going to trade up to get him. Anyways, the Jazz basically traded Shabazz Muhammad, number 14, and Gorgui Dieng at 21 for Trey Burke, which is fantastic. I mean, I like Shabazz Muhammad. I mean, he has that it factor where he can take over a game, he can score, he can shoot, he's a good ball handler, he's a good rebounder, whatnot. But the problem is he wasn't much of a team player, as per se. He didn't have a lot of assists in college. I mean, pretty marginally low volume of assists compared to what Trey Burke had. And Trey Burke had an assist ratio of 3 to 1? I think it was 3 to 1. Pretty dang good. I think it was 3 to 1. Pretty dang good assist to turnover ratio, which is fantastic. He averaged 6.2 assists per game. I think it was somewhere around 18.6 points a game. A few rebounds. I think a steal. I mean, he's very active defensively, but that's where, like, a lot of people are like, okay, that's where he needs to work on. Everybody's, a lot of things, Locked On Sports, a lot of journalists are saying, he's small, blah, blah, blah. He's 6'1", 190 pounds. There are a lot of point guards that are around that size, and I mean 6'1", 6'2", 6', or smaller. I mean, Devin Harris is 6'3". Chris Paul, I'm not saying he is Chris Paul, but I mean, Chris Paul's 6', is, I think, right around 190 pounds or so. So, I don't think size is an issue. He has pretty long arms for his size and for his point guard position, which is fantastic, which means he has, what's the word I'm looking for? Ability. Basically, he has the ability to get really good defensive because his arms are long. He's going to be able to guard bigger guards. And that's what you want with a point guard. I mean, he has that it factor. He can score. He can shoot the ball. And he can pass the ball. So a lot of people are thinking he may actually start. And now what's going to happen, and this is what has happened for years and years and years and years, way before Jerry even took over, was with the Jazz, you don't just get, your start just because you're a high pick. I mean, Deron Williams, the number 3 pick in the draft, 2005, did not start the first half of the season. That's that. No, that didn't happen. So likely he will not start at the beginning of the season unless for some reason we just miss out on all the point guards and he's actually our best bet and we just throw him in there. Likely what I see is he comes off the bench for maybe the first fourth or first third, maybe even the first half of the season, and then he picks it up and then Corbin starts starting him. Now whoever we're going to have at the position, I mean, we may bring back Mo Williams. We may go out and grab, oh my god, I cannot think of his name right now. I can see his face so clearly. He's with the Pistons, he was with Toronto for a while, the point guard, Calderon. Sure, man, I know it's a C, Calderon. A lot of people want him. I mean, you really only want somebody for 1 or 2 years, somebody that would be willing to come off the bench. Probably this season. They would be starting at the beginning of the season, but by the end of the season, you would hope that they would be coming off the bench because you really want Trey Burke to really start and you know bring things up. Now, I can't remember who made the point. It may have been Lockdown Sports, but I can't give him credit because I'm not sure if it was him or not. But I'm thinking it was. Basically, in 2005, when we drafted Darren Williams, we already had Carlos Boozer, and we already had Karolinko, and we already had Memodo Kerr. So we had three guys on our team that were really becoming leaders. Now, Boozer ended up becoming the actual leader on the team, but before that, it was Karolinko, and yeah, I think Memo had been there. But he just barely came over in 05. Was it 05? Yeah, because Pistons won the championship 04. He may have come over in 04, actually. Now I'm thinking about it. He came over in 04 after he won the championship. But still, I think Karolinko was it before Boozer came. And then Boozer started becoming the actual leader. And then Darren came along. And then, so he didn't really have that point where it's like, well, this could be his team. It never came to that point until Boozer left. So you're coming to this position where Darren has, you know, the personality to be a leader. But he came into a situation where it just wasn't there. I mean, he couldn't just take over the team. It just wasn't there because Boozer has that same mentality of being the leader on the team. And he had already been there for 2 years? I want to say 2 years. Maybe it was a year. I think it was the second year. I think it was the second year when Darren got drafted. So, yeah, he just finished his second season with the Jazz when Darren got drafted. So Darren comes along, has no chance basically at all to become the leader. I mean, maybe a slight chance to become a leader, but it just was not there. On this hand, I mean, we don't have, I mean, I don't know what's going to happen in the free agency. Free agency technically starts tonight, Sunday night at 10 p.m. Pacific time. So we'll see what happens. I know Dwight Howard is meeting with Houston, I think tonight. I want to say it's tonight. But obviously we have no chance to get Dwight Howard. And quite frankly, I don't want him. I mean, he's a great player, but he brings a lot of drama. And really, he doesn't want to be the main guy in a team. He doesn't want it to be his team. And you saw, I mean, Orlando kind of was his team. I mean, it was his team, but he just doesn't have the personality to be that leader, to be that guy in the team where you're like, this is your team, what do we do? He's just not that personality. He never pushed forward to become that leader and with L.A., and obviously you can't with Kobe around. So it just wasn't there. So, yeah. So anyways, at this position, I mean, if you don't bring back Al Jefferson, if you don't bring back Paul Millsap, or pretty much any of those two guys, which were really the key leaders on our team this past season, then you get to the point, okay, this is the young guys' team. This is their team now. So, I mean, and really, between the four guys we have already, I mean, there's really no clear-cut leader. I mean, you want Gordon to be it, but he just hasn't done it yet. And you kind of think maybe it's just not really in his personality. I mean, he's more like Paul, who's a lead by example. Al Jefferson's more of kind of a 50-50 split, where he's a lead by example guy. He goes out on the court, he tries, he does everything he can, and then the other 50%, he's kind of in the huddle. He's kind of, oh, we got to do this. We want to win this game. I mean, he's not full on one side or the other. And actually, I like that. I really do like that. I think that fit his personality well. I mean, he would go out, score. He would try as hard as he could on defense. He would be talking in huddles, but not to the point where you're like, okay, this is his team, because it wasn't. It really wasn't. I mean, and you just basically you knew it because you knew this was going to be Derek Favors' team and this was going to be Gordon Hayward's team. Now the Trey Burke has that leadership mentality where he's hopefully going to come in. I'm like, okay, guys, let's do this. And just kind of take over that leadership role. And that's kind of what you want, especially from point guard. You want him to come in because this is really going to turn into his team as long as he develops correctly and becomes great. Now, you can't automatically assume, oh, he's going to be the Jazz's next Darren Williams or the next John Stockton. No. He's a number 9 pick. Now, and it's not a great draft. It's a good draft. Not a great draft. It's not as bad as everybody's saying, oh, this is a terrible draft. Last year was a pretty terrible draft. This year is a pretty bad draft. But it's not as bad as everybody points it out. There's still pretty good players coming out of the draft. I mean, I want to hope to say that Trey Burke is going to be one of the better players. And I can't remember who it was, but somebody on a national level said that Trey Burke is going to be a Rookie of the Year. That'd be awesome. It doesn't mean that it's going to happen. It doesn't mean a lot of great things are going to happen if he gets that, because there's players. Tyreke Evans got Rookie of the Year. Look at him. He's declined every single season. Got to say, though, it's the Kings, so you can't really expect too much more than that. But, you know, you can't automatically assume everything's going to go great just because somebody won Rookie of the Year. So we bring it along, and the Jazz also, since the Jazz only had a second-round pick, which is a number 46 pick, the Jazz ended up trading that and sending $3 million to Denver for the rights to Rudy Gobert, which the Jazz were super high on. I mean, he is huge. He's a 7'2 guy from France. He's got a 7'9 wingspan. That's 2 inches longer than JaVale McGee's wingspan. And JaVale McGee had the longest wingspan in the NBA, longest standing reach in the NBA. Now that belongs to Rudy Gobert. Now, it's not going to say that from what I've heard, he's really athletic. So he's going to be able to be a shot blocker. Some people think that he's going to be top 10 in the NBA in shot blocks by the time his career is over. Now, that could be a 10-year career, could be a 15-year career. Nobody really knows, because nobody knows if he's going to develop offensively. Because when he is shooting, now Locked On Sports brought this up, when he shoots like a hook shot or something, or something similar like that, when he shoots a hook shot, he's not angling it up. Because when he's jumping, he's above the rim, so he has to like angle it down. He's not, if he puts any arc on that, it just overshoots it. Unless he has some magical, awesome floater touch that we don't know about yet. So basically, for him to dunk, I mean, he can get a tippy toes and dunk it. So he's going to be like Mark Eaton. Mark Eaton was 7'3". I don't know how long his wingspan was, but he was a big dude. I mean, when you would see some of the highlights from, you know, John Stockton would bullet a pass into Mark Eaton, who was wide open for a dunk, you would see him catch the ball and just kind of like little bunny hop and dunk it. And I mean, that's going to be Rudy Gobert. That's what he's going to be. He's not going to be like a super crazy guy. I mean, he may develop and be crazy, but you got to think about him. He's super raw. You know, he played pretty well in the French league, which is getting better. It's not great. It's getting better. But he's big. And you just hope, I mean, if he can just be, I mean, you can step on the court right now and be a defensive beast. He's just so long. I mean, there's some things you'd have to teach him and be like, okay, you got to do this and this and this. You can't do that. You can't do this. Blah, blah, blah. So, I mean, there's things you'd have to teach him. But you put him on the court right now and boom, he's going to get a couple blocks already. I mean, he's going to get some blocks, get some rebounds. He's a good shooter from the free throw line, surprisingly. Because from what Locked On Sports said, he has huge hands. I mean, like Shaq hands. I mean, just giant. But he shoots 76% from the free throw line, which is fantastic. I mean, that's crazy. I mean, you can't imagine how hard it is. I mean, yeah, actually, you can imagine. I mean, for all you people with normal-sized hands like me, I mean, actually, I got small hands, but go get a baseball or a softball and try and shoot a free throw. I mean, it's a similar type of thing. Or shoot like those mini basketballs you can go to the store and buy. Just try and shoot a free throw with it. It's just so different. I mean, it's just so different because your hand just, yeah, it covers half the ball and, you know, you just can't get everything right. I mean, so for somebody that has huge hands like that and can shoot 70%, 76% from the free throw, that's crazy. That's awesome. So you can't just go in and, okay, we're going to hack a shack him. No, because he can hit free throws. So, and obviously when the free throw percentages do translate to them in, usually they're better. You usually shoot better in the NBA than you did in college. But then again, he's not coming from college. He's coming from another league. So it probably won't go up too much. But it'd be awesome if he could get to like 78 to 80%. I mean, that'd be insanely awesome. So he's going to be a defensive monster in a few years. I mean, he's going to be really good defensively. But you got to think, okay, he's going to get, you know, 6-7 minutes a night. Basically what Kanter was, not this past season, but the season, his first season, that's what Gobert is going to be. Now, Kirilenko, I know a lot of you don't like him because he was always injured. It's just who he is. It's just his style of play. He's always giving 100%. He's always, you know, getting down dirty, diving on the floor, you know, trying to go for loose balls, trying to, you know, get rebounds that really he shouldn't be going for. But he's just so active. He's going to get injured. I mean, you get, you know, Manu Ginobili's the same way. I mean, just so active. He gets injured, misses a ton of games every year. And Kirilenko's the same way. So, you got to think about it. Okay. And actually, this would work out great. So, the Jazz, what Locked On Sports was thinking is Marvin Williams was going to be the stretch four for the Jazz. You know, he's going to come in, grab some minutes at the power forward position, you know, be able to shoot the three decently, stretch the floor out, blah, 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 that type of thing. Now that, oh, I gotta go invisible real quick. now you think, now that Marvin Williams got surgery on his Achilles ankle, he's not gonna be back until earliest around January. Now, yeah, I gotta think a little bit more recovery time, so probably around February. Probably beginning of February is when he'll come back. So now the Jazz have to go out and get another big. Why would they go out and get a big, though? Why not get somebody whose kind of natural position is the power forward position, but has the speed and agility and length to guard a three? Kirilenko is that guy. Now, he just opted out of his second year with the Timberwolves. You bring him back for 2 years. You sign him to a similar deal to what the Wolves signed him. A 2-year deal with a team. Well, you do a team option if you can. If not, you give him a player option if that's what he wants. But you give him a deal like that, a $20 million, so it's $10 million a year. Now, the Jazz have to spend money. I mean, they're not going to give a crazy contract, but they still want flexibility. But they have to, you know, use up a certain amount of their, I think it's over 50 million, maybe 55 million or so. I mean, I think it's 50. I think it's close to 55 million that they have to sign, have under contract, or else they, I don't know what happens if they don't, but they have to get over that threshold. It's like a 92%, they have to use 92% of their cap, so they're going to have to overpay a little bit, not a lot, but a little bit, or, you know, in that capacity. So they're bringing back Kirilenko. He can shoot the three very well. I mean, not great, but I mean, you know, a good 35%. I mean, it's solid. Stretches the floor. He's super active. He's pretty fast. He can defend a four. He can defend a five. He can defend a three. In certain cases, a two. So you bring him back for defensive purposes and the fact that he can shoot the three front and play the four or the three. So you bring him and do that. So you bring him off the bench. Maybe not. Maybe you start him. We'll see. You start him. And then you bring him out early. And if you bring back Carroll, you bring him off the bench at the three, probably around the 6-minute mark. And around the probably 8-minute mark, maybe three or four minute mark, you take out either probably Kanter. Take out Kanter. You bring in Kirilenko at the four position. And there you go. Then you got stretch four. You leave him on there for a little while. And then you take out Favors, you bring in Kanter and Gobert. And you take out Karolinko. Or just slide him over to the three, bring out Carol, and that type of deal. You just kind of let little merry-go-round. I mean, Gobert's going to have to get a couple minutes here and there, and but he's not going to be a huge minute guy. I mean, you got to give him some developing. Anyways, that's my pitch. Bringing Karolinko as a stretch four for 2 years. That'd be great. He can start the three, come off the bench for the four. Great. That's fantastic. So, other than that, I mean, bringing in a point guard, so I would like to bring Calderon or Mo Williams if Mo is willing to come off the bench. There's that whole little thing that, you know, Yahoo was reporting that Mo either starts or goes find somewhere else. His agent, you know, dismissed that Mo Williams said that, because that'd be a stupid thing to say. I think Mo would come back. I think he does. I know he does want to start. You really do. That's just who he is. But if he's willing to come off the bench, I mean, that's a decent guy to come off the bench, and you know he's going to get injured. So then Trey's going to get even more minutes at a certain time. It's going to be great. So I think Mo would be great. Calderon would be great. But you want somebody who can mentor and teach Trey Burke. So second of all, I would like to bring Randy Foy back. Just pure shooter. He was awesome last year. I mean, he had a little struggle about midseason, but he got back into things after a couple weeks. And, I mean, he still shot amazing. I mean, he shattered the Jazz's three-point record. He shot a super high percent. I think it was a 43% clip. I mean, it was insane. He was crazy good. So you bring him back, and then you bring him off at the two. I mean, you see, you bring him back, and, I mean, you still got Burks, who's kind of in that. So your kind of decision is, do you bring back Carol, which you want to. But if you bring back Carol, you really want to bring back Foy, because he can shoot the ball like crazy. So if you bring back Foy and Carol, then you get in that position, okay, what's going on? And if you bring back Karolinko, but then you got to think, okay, maybe you do bring Karolinko off the bench. You start going at three, and then you start Foy at the two. So, at some point, your starting lineup would be Trey Burke, Randy Foy, Gordon Hayward, Enes Kanter, and Derek Favors. And then, off the bench, you would have, whether it's Mo Williams, Jose Calderon, somebody. You bring somebody off the bench to the point guard position. You bring Alec Burks off at the two. You bring Damari Carroll off at the three. Karolinko at the four, and Gobert at the five. And then some other instances, you'd have Jeremy Evans in there, and who knows about Neto. You don't really know about if he's going to stay or not, if he's going to go back to Brazil for a year. Still don't know any word about that. And Neto was the 47th pick, maybe 48th pick. They just traded Atlanta a future second round pick, which I think is next year, and that's actually the second round pick that the Jazz had traded Memo for. So the Jazz traded Memo a few years ago to Brooklyn. We got $8 million. Can't remember what it's called, but we got a financial thing. It was a trade exception, an $8 million trade exception. And we dumped, you know, we dumped his contract off, and then we got a second round pick for 2014. So we traded that pick from Brooklyn to Atlanta, and then we got Raul Neto. So that's gonna be awesome. And he is a pretty good. He's still young, still super raw. So it's not like he's gonna come in and make a huge impact. He'll be a backup if anything. But yeah, so the Jazz got some actually really good picks. You know, they were really active. Dennis Lindsay was insane this year. I mean, getting two guys that you really wanted to get, but you really didn't think was going to happen. You assumed you were going to be able to get Gobert. And for what I've heard is the Jazz really liked Olenek, and he went to the Mavericks, so which actually ended up going to Boston. So a lot of things going on, and, you know, the Jazz, Jazz may have a tough year. They may have a great year. It just depends on what's going on. And Jerry Sloan's coming back as just like a mentor to Corbin. He'll be there. You know, he won't be. He might come to. He'll go to some practices, but he's not going to travel with the team. Maybe occasionally, but he's not going to be there and stepping on Corbin's foot. He's just going to be there. What Frank Layden was to Jerry. That's what he's going to be. So you bring him back in, and everybody's going to be like, oh, Jerry, you know, there's going to be a bad night or a couple of bad nights, and they're going to be like, oh, fire Corbin, hire Jerry, blah, blah, blah. No, Jerry doesn't want that. You know, he want eventually, maybe, yeah, but I don't think he'll be. If he does become a coach of the Jazz again, it's not going to be for a long time. And if anything, it'll be assistant. I think he'll become an assistant to some degree, if anything. I don't think he'll, unless Corbin decides he wants to leave and then Jerry gets that huge itch, hey, I want to coach the Jazz again. But we'll see. But from what Jerry's been saying, no, there's no pressure on Corbin. He's just here to mentor him and help him out with some things and be a whiteboard for him, and, you know, just bounce ideas off and, you know, get some advice and whatnot. And there's no pressure whatsoever. So this is a great time for the Jazz. I mean, they're building up, and you're finally starting to see what the Jazz are going to look like for the next 5 to 10 years. You know, we got a nice young core, a nucleus. We have a leader. We have a point guard. We've got a shooting guard who may or not be good or not. We don't know yet. We'll see. Alec Burks has a long way to go, but he started to show what he can do at the end of the season last year. Gordon Hayward is going to be awesome. I mean, he's just going to be that awesome complimentary player to Trey Burke. And, I mean, you really hope Trey Burke really pans out, because he will be, you know, amazed at what Gordon Hayward can do. Gordon Hayward can do everything on the floor. He sees the floor very well. He passes very well. He rebounds pretty good. I mean, he can do better. But when he's actually trying everything, he can do anything. So he can shoot the ball, he can pass the ball, he can rebound the ball, he can play great defense. He's a very underrated defender. So that's awesome. Then we have Enes Kanter and Derek Favors, who are going to be beasts. Derek Favors, at least on the defensive end, we're still looking at the offensive end. Carmelo's coming in, and from what Locked On Sports was saying, and he was just working to death. Do this, and blah, blah, blah. Just teaching him things, teaching. You know, it really surprised Locked On Sports that he was doing all this, just pushing Favors like crazy. That's going to be awesome. And then apparently he's going to be working out Rudy Gobert as well. We all already knew that he was going to be working with Enes Kanter as well. So three bigs that he's going to work with. And you almost think, well, might as well get Jeremy in there. You assume Jeremy will get in there. So that's going to be really good for the bigs. So that's pretty cool. And then what else do we got? That's it. I mentioned everybody. So. And then you're surrounded by some good shooters, some good players off the bench, somebody that can create off the bench. And that's why you almost think that's what Burks is going to be. He's going to be a good, solid 15 points off the bench guy, a Manu Ginobili type player, somebody who just comes off the bench, hits a bunch of shots, goes back to the bench, and just waits, you know, just, you know, a good playmaker, a good, a slasher, a decent shooter. He's still got a long ways to go, but he's starting to get there, and you just hope he does what he does. So that's it. That's all I got for you. There's really not going to much. I might do another podcast, you know, maybe a week after the 10th or so, you know, basically probably around the 10th, I guess I'll say, 10th to the 15th, I'll do another podcast. I'm just recapping free agency, because by the 15th, you know, we're going to have the players that we wanted to go out and get. And whether we get them or not. So anyways, that's all I got for you. Hopefully you guys enjoyed this podcast covering the draft, my hopefuls for free agency, and what the future is for the Jazz. So you guys have an awesome day. Follow me on Twitter @OakleyCon, OAKLYCON. That's all I got for you.